The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be back here with you. I've got a little bit of the sound above me, guys. Last night, we saw one of the dress rehearsals of Celtic Throne. We're going to play some clips from that toward the end of the program, so that'll give you something to look forward to. We've got a trailer that we've tweeted out as well. We're selling tickets fast. Right now, we're only selling half of the auditorium seats because of the social distancing, but that could change. We'll see as we draw closer to the first performance, because it's already sold out. The tickets that we've allotted for that have sold out. That's coming up on June 28th. I believe we have it's July the 5th. And that's the one that that goes online. If you'd like to set up an account with us at thetrumpet.com, you can view Celtic Throne on July the 5th. That's a couple of Sundays from now. So we've got that. We've got a couple of shows planned in Branson, Missouri, after the premiere next Sunday. So a lot of really awesome opportunities for our young people, and they're getting so much better with each practice. Last night's dress rehearsal was just incredible compared to the one that I saw just a week ago. So they've been working super hard, and you can certainly see the fruits coming from that labor. Several people wrote in, by the way, excited about the bird feeder and the great spotted woodpeckers that are visiting the feeder there at Edstone. This listener here says, thanks for your program. I love your bird feeder footage. High-tech twitcher, it says. And then another one says, nice feeder, wonderful woodpeckers. And then finally, beautiful bird. Thanks for letting us see this. I got an email from one of our listeners down in Australia. He said he put up a bird feeder in the back of his yard. Callum Wood is his name. I think you see his little boy there. I believe that's Henry. In any event, they put this feeder up a couple of weeks ago, and he said that within days they had this this group or a crackle, as they call it, of 10 cockatoos. I think you can see four of them there on top of the bird feeder there. So exciting to see all of the enthusiastic bird feeders that we have in our audience. I can think of four or five that email me from time to time, and it's great to see the children getting involved in that as well. A couple more emails here. It says, thank you so much for your radio program that keeps people up to date with the real news. I hope to be able to see you at SEP. That comes from one of our teenagers. Another one here says, I really enjoyed today's program. When you talked about SEP summer camp, it brought back a lot of memories of when I went to Orr, Minnesota. I was able to go early with the counselors in the early 1970s and help get things ready for the campers. I was 12. We took a bus from Big Sandy, Texas to Minnesota. It was beautiful there. The only thing we didn't do was turn in our devices. And of course, back then, I don't think they would have had many devices. I guess you would have had a Walkman, maybe. But besides that, it says, I'm so thankful that we didn't have those back then. Well, there you go. After things were ready, campers began to arrive. I was in cabin 5. I wanted to share that the two words we never heard were, I'm bored. No one ever said I'm bored at SEP. Lots of activity, as I read yesterday. I'm so happy to see that SEP continues. I do thank God. He continues his work with the youth. I wish everyone their best summer camp ever. And then finally, another listener says, thanks so much for the program. It gets my dad started, or my day rather, my day started off in the right direction. All the time and effort put forth is greatly appreciated. Thanks to God for providing this invaluable service. Well, it really is important, all the more so when you see this world full of so much so much fake news, so many lies, so much deception. This headline from the Los Angeles Times: Atlanta police killed a black man for being drunk at Wendy's. That's from the Los Angeles Times editorial board. This is not some far left commentator submitting an op-ed piece. This is the LA Times. We heard from the editor. Remember the editor of the LA Times that said how much they're learning? They're learning about institutional racism. And here is the LA Times editorial board saying this poor man was killed just because he got drunk. He got drunk at Wendy's, and so they shot him dead because he was drunk. Is that what happened? Is that the truth? What do they want you to take away from that headline? This is one of the most influential papers in the United States. CBS ran this headline yesterday. Deputies kill half-brother of black man found hanged in park. Well, that's a loaded headline if ever there was one. Deputies, that's the police, kill half-brother of black man found hanged in park. This is what Sean Davis tweeted in response. The man who was found hanged had committed suicide, and the half-brother in the story fired a weapon at police. But who needs that kind of context when all you really care about is starting a violent race war? Who needs the context? Who needs the actual news? Who needs the actual facts? When the only thing you're really trying to do is start or incite a race war. That's what they want. That's what so many of these media outlets want. This is Sky News, by the way, from yesterday. They're talking about the weekly ritual in the UK now of taking a knee. I guess it's on Wednesday nights. Thursday night, remember, that was when you had to come out and really clap and support and cheer on the NHS. They're going to run out of weeknights to worship their idols in Britain. Here's Sky News from Wednesday, clip 4.
People here who are gathering for a third week now have just taken a knee for 2 minutes. They're now chanting and clapping and some motivational talks by the organisers, of course, to raise awareness for the cause, the movement Black Lives Matter, protests, of course, that originated in the US, demanding justice for one man, for George Floyd, has quickly morphed into a worldwide demonstration.
She says it originated in the U.S. and it quickly morphed into a worldwide movement. Is it really worldwide? Are they taking a knee in Mexico as well? Or Brazil? I don't know. I haven't looked at all of the footage from everywhere. The Middle East? Is it happening in the Middle East? Southeast Asia? Are they doing this in Malaysia as well? It's pretty much the United States and Britain. All of this self-loathing, all of this self-hatred, all of this anti-Americanism, it's right in our own nation. People that hate themselves, that hate their nation. The thugs just brought down a statue of George Washington in Portland. Something that your media said, well, that'll never happen. Nothing like that. They said in 2017, all we want is to get rid of the Confederates because it's about slavery and racism and we've just got to get rid of the Confederacy. Robert E. Lee and such. And down comes George Washington. This follows the statue of Thomas Jefferson. And the authorities, I guess, where are they? They're nowhere to be found. Burn a flag on top of George Washington and then pull down the statue? That's just common. I guess scenes like that are common. We've got to do it. We've got to do it for justice. Justice for George. The Bank of England and the Church of England have apologized for their links to slavery. So now the Bank of England has to come out and apologize. The Bank of England is racist. Or it's somehow had links to racism in the past. And it's one apology after another, after another, after another. skip ahead to this one, fellas, from this is the Oklahoma State football coach. He made the mistake of wearing a T-shirt that had OANN on the front. That's the, I think it's called the One American News Network. This is a conservative news network. He went fishing, this football coach, and he came back from the fishing expedition. He had a T-shirt on. Somebody took a picture, tweeted it out, and people were deeply offended by this T-shirt. And so here comes his response, his predictable response. Clip three.
Our players expressed their feelings as individuals and as team members. They helped me see through their eyes how the T-shirt affected their hearts. Once I learned how that network felt about Black Lives Matter, I was disgusted and knew it was completely unacceptable to me. I want to apologize to all members of our team, former players, and their families for the pain and discomfort that has been caused over the last 2 days.
Everyone on the team, former members, all the families of former members, former players, he's apologizing to all of them because of the pain and the discomfort that was caused by him wearing a One America News Network T-shirt. A T-shirt. Of course, he's looking at his team. Most of the players, I would assume, are minorities. And there's a man that's probably going to lose his job if he doesn't do what he did there. Have we ever seen this kind of groveling, this kind of pandering? It's all over the place. Yahoo Sports. As prominent athletes speak out on racial violence, where is Tiger Woods? Where is Tiger Woods' voice? He's African American. Where is he? You have to speak out. There can be no dissent on the one hand, and then you have to speak out in favor of it. So here's this column. What is Tiger Woods thinking today? How profoundly was he affected when he saw those images of Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck? How outraged is Woods? It's been a week now. In what way has Woods been moved by images of rioting in Los Angeles, so close to where he grew up in Orange County? How have images of police and National Guard standoffs, the pepper spraying of protesters, the launching of tear gas and rubber bullets in at least 140 cities across the United States landed on his heart? This is like, granted, there's no sports going on right now, so they probably don't have too much to write about. But this is crazy. What is Tiger Woods doing? What is he thinking? We've got to get into the mind of Tiger Woods. And if they do that, what if they don't get the response that they want? Well, then the mob goes after him. No dissent. You must kneel. And that's what they're doing every Wednesday in the UK. So many of the residents there coming out of their house, coming out of the apartment and taking a knee for justice. It's a worldwide phenomenon, say the media. In fact, this nonsense is coming primarily from the United States and Great Britain. And it's fueled by the media. They're pushing it. Who needs the facts, like Sean Davis says there, when all you care about is starting a race war? This is from some talk show, I think it is. But this is even a conservative, the owner of Chick-fil-A. That's a conservative individual. And this was what he did or suggested that white people ought to do on a program just this week. Clip two.
So I invite folks to put some words to action here. And if we need to find somebody that needs to have their shoe shine, we need to just go right on over and shine their shoes. And whether they got tennis shoes on or not, maybe they got sandals on, it really doesn't matter. But there's a time in which we need to have, you know, some personal action here.
That's him kneeling in front of a black celebrity. I couldn't see who it was. But anyway, he's shining shoes. That's what he's suggesting in order to heal the divide between the races. This story from AP News. This is from yesterday. Oakland's mayor said five ropes found hanging from trees in a city park are nooses and racially charged symbols of terror. But a resident said they are merely exercise equipment that he put up there months ago. This is the mayor now walking through the park. Everyone's a suspect. Every scene is suspicious. This is the America they're creating, where everyone questions one another, where everyone suspects some kind of nefarious motives or behavior. It says Mayor Libby Schaaf said Wednesday that a hate crime investigation was underway after a social media post identified a noose. All it takes is a social media post, a tweet of a T-shirt, a tweet or a post of ropes hanging from a tree. It says police said they searched the area on Tuesday and found five ropes attached to trees. Well, what could this be about? It says the police department provided five photographs of trees, some of which showed knotted ropes, and one that appeared to have a piece of plastic pipe attached to a rope hanging from tree limbs. They have been removed by city officials. Now listen to this. Victor Sangby, who is black, okay? He's black. He told KGO-TV that the ropes were put out, were part of a rigging that he and his friends used as part of a larger swing system. He also shared video of the swing in use. It says out of the dozen and hundreds and thousands of people that walked by, no one has thought that it looked anywhere close to a noose. Folks have used it for exercise. It was really a fun addition to the park that we tried to create, says this black American. But they got to pull down the ropes. They got to pull down the ropes. Nigel Farage, I didn't get to this clip yesterday. It's just a short one, but he's saying, where are the people that are courageous enough to stand up to this mob? Here's clip five.
Yes, they want to destroy the nation state, capitalism, the family unit, and virtually everything that we've stood for and previous generations have fought for. And we need brave people in politics and the media to stand firm and not to allow us to live under mob rule.
That's right. We need brave people to stand firm, to stand up for the family, to stand up for the nation state, to stand up for your capitalist system. This is what they want to destroy. It's more, as Richard Palmer covered that this week. I covered it earlier on a program. This is not about, obviously, it's not about George Floyd. It's not even about slavery or racism. They want to bring down the system. They want to destroy the nation state, the capitalism, the capitalist system. They want to destroy the family. Black Lives Matter says so in their mission statement. But you can't criticize them. Even if you wear a T-shirt that has a TV network on it that might have a commentator who criticized Black Lives Matter, this is deeply offensive to the entire Oklahoma State football family. Deeply offensive. We've got a new Trumpet magazine coming out. And how important is this issue? Given what's happening in the world today, given what's happening in the United States and Britain, we need the truth. We need the truth. You have so many powerful voices in media and elsewhere who care about nothing more than starting a violent race war. And, you know, the president's tweeted out a couple of promos or I don't know what you'd call them, if they're for his campaign or what, but he's calling the media out for the way that they frame these stories. They make everything about race. They're inflaming racial division and hatred. And the president, Donald Trump, is calling them out for this. There's not too many others, though, that have done that. This is from Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief last night. He's writing here about the next trumpet. He explains in the brief how that we had another, just a whole different subject, basically, planned for this issue. I believe it's the August issue. Until this tragedy involving George Floyd when he was killed. And Mr. Hilliker says here, it truly provides a powerful perspective, speaking of the next trumpet, that you will not find anywhere else. You just won't find it anywhere else. This voice, the voice of reason, it's being blotted out. He writes, and race riots were prophesied. Our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, shows how the Bible forecast this racial divide. He reviews articles he has written from the past 3 decades detailing how this problem would intensify and explains how he knew. The article Surrendering to Lawlessness examines the spirit behind the protests led by Black Lives Matter and the capitulation by public authorities to this radical movement. It's a radical movement. These are Marxist revolutionaries pulling down the statue of George Washington. Well, setting it on fire first and then pulling it down. That's Portland for you. They're working to try to set up an autonomous zone just like they have in Seattle. If you were living in those areas, what a frightening scene. I saw a clip of this woman that had to get out, basically, of that Seattle zone. She said it's so dangerous at night. And yet the media, they go in there during the day and they say things like it's a festival. Well, it's a street party. Well, they're just out here having fun. Nothing to worry about here. You can't get the truth. Why try to give some context when all you're concerned about is starting a violent race war? It says here, my article, this is Mr. Hilliker referring to America's self-inflicted race wound, shows how enemies within and without the nation are gathering, or rather gloating over the destruction on America's streets. And then he talks about a few of the other articles that are there in this forthcoming issue. If you haven't subscribed to the Trumpet magazine, make sure that you subscribe today. Every single one of these issues, I've noted this all through this calendar year, every single issue of the Trumpet this year has just been spot on. It's contained a powerful message that you don't hear anywhere else. You just don't hear it. When we come back, we'll talk about this Supreme Court decision yesterday. President Trump wanting to reverse the DACA decision that Obama made, 8, 10 years ago, and the Supreme Court won't let him do it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the program, you can write to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
So yesterday, the Supreme Court denied President Trump's attempt to rescind the DACA executive action that the President Obama took many years ago. So basically, just to sum it up, I guess, in the simplest terms, President Obama comes forward with this unconstitutional executive action. It goes forward. It becomes law, basically. The Supreme Court, no court does anything about it. Nobody challenges it. And so then President Trump comes into office and says, all right, well, I'm going to make an executive action that rescinds it, that does away with it. And now the Supreme Court gets involved. And John Roberts says, per usual, he's happy to join with the liberals on the court to say, no, you can't do this. This is part of Clarence Thomas's dissent. He wrote, DHS created DACA during the Obama administration without any statutory authorization and without going through the requisite rulemaking process. As a result, the program was unlawful from its inception. Okay, this was unlawful from the beginning. The majority does not even, he's talking about the majority on the court, John Roberts and the liberals. It says the majority does not even attempt to explain why a court has the authority to scrutinize an agency's policy reasons for rescinding an unlawful program under the arbitrary and capricious microscope. It says the decision to countermand an unlawful agent an unlawful agency action is clearly reasonable so long as the agency's determination of illegality is sound. Our review should be at an end. He says here, Clarence Thomas does, today's decision must be recognized for what it is, an effort to avoid a politically controversial but legally correct decision. Okay, it is controversial, but it is nevertheless the correct decision. So here is President Trump, and he's still facing intense resistance from the radical left. Barack Obama, he was gloating yesterday on Twitter, tweeting out that this is a victory. He said, 8 years ago this week, we protected young people who were raised as part of our American family from deportation. Today, I'm happy for them, their families, and all of us. We may look different and come from everywhere, but what makes us American are our shared ideals. Shared ideals like illegal immigration, wide open borders. That's what they want. That's what he's excited about. And he's got a lot of support, not just from the black community, but from a lot of white progressives. Carolyn Glick, I've been meaning to get to this for, I think, a week and a half now. But she wrote an article a couple weeks ago talking about Barack Obama's influence on the United States and this progressive movement. She says, white progressives prioritize the advancement of the interests of minorities and immigrants over their own and over those of American society as a whole. She's basically paraphrasing this piece by Goldberg, I forget his first name, but she says Goldberg argues that the massive increase in internet usage by white progressives over the past decade is responsible for the radicalization. Online platforms have created an information bubble that has created a warped presentation of reality to those inside the bubble. In this warped reality, race relations are far worse than they are in reality. I talked about this in the first segment. You see the way that they put the headlines together and then what they cover, how they frame it. There's an agenda. It says, hence, those who inhabit this bubble prefer truth, quote unquote, as presented in the bubble to facts. Their truth, that's what they prefer. Even if they don't get all the facts right, well, who cares? As long as your mission is to incite race wars, don't let the facts slow you down. She says here, Goldberg is undoubtedly correct that the more time people spend inside their internet bubble, the more removed they become from objective reality. But the internet isn't the only source of radicalization. She's just talking here about how we became so radicalized, our nations. She says the Obama presidency was also a factor. When Barack Obama won the presidential race in 2008, many Americans believed his victory was proof the United States had overcome its racist past. Remember that? Remember when that was supposed to be proof that we had overcome that past? The sin of slavery, discrimination. She says here, Obama, however, did not support this view. That's not the way Barack Obama thought. Throughout his tenure in office, Obama used the power of his position to resonate and legitimize positions on race that until then had been relegated to the leftist margins of American politics. See, he brought it right into the mainstream of the Democrat Party, right into the mainstream of the Democrat media complex. She says here, Obama cultivated the view that far from being a post-racial society, America is inherently racist, and that American racism is structural. It was baked in and impossible to overcome. In so doing, Obama gave credence to the false claim at the heart of the riots that black Americans are under continuous existential threat from the state as a whole, and from law enforcement bodies first and foremost. So he's the one that really brought that right into the heart. That was number one on the agenda for his presidency. Racism in the DNA, inherently racist. And you can remember all of even then, going back to 2008, 2009, just to put in another plug for the trumpet, but hardly anyone was writing about all of the disturbing associations that Barack Obama had had. Bill Ayers, all of these white progressives, all of these black extremists, these radical groups inviting Black Lives Matter right into the White House. Back then, that seemed somewhat controversial. At least a few news organizations sounded off on that. Today, it's a movement. Sky News says it's worldwide, but it's pretty much America and the UK. And there can be no dissent, no dissenting voice, no criticism at all of Black Lives Matter. Carolyn Glick says here, white progressives certainly have their hand in this. But Barack Obama, he was a factor, a huge factor. Well, I won't go through some of the things that we wrote ourselves back in 2008. And a lot of it, we were just going back to Barack Obama's memoir. What he wrote himself about how that the anger is real, it's powerful. The anger in the black community, it's there because of racism. Well, the other point that Carolyn Glick brings out, as for how the Democrats and the left wing movement became so radicalized, is the higher education system. So she's spot on. The educational system. It's so many of these young people that are pulling down the statues. They've just been indoctrinated to believe this, and that's exactly what Mr. Armstrong wrote about. This is from 1968. He said, and there were lots of race riots back then. And Mr. Armstrong said, look now at these sudden emotional flare-ups of student revolt and of race consciousness, prejudice, resentments, and hatreds. Why the sudden inflaming of student rebellion? Why have both exploded into violence? He says the underlying cause is simply human nature. Human nature is the underlying cause of the strife, the revolt, the violence. But what has triggered it? He says, in most cases, I can tell you definitely that these riots and student uprisings have been deliberately planned, intentionally provoked, well-organized. He says, today, communists appear on college and university campuses under the guise of the new leftist movement. That's from 1968. That's incredible, that statement. This old Marxist movement. Under the label of, well, this is the new leftist movement. This is progressivism. It's just a Marxist attack. Communist infiltration, as Mr. Armstrong wrote about way back then. This is from The Federalist recently. It says the author of the risible and flawed 1619 Project, now taught in more than 3,500 schools, as compulsory history, predictably said the rampant looting is symbolic taking. We played that clip for you a few weeks ago. It says here, Professor Stephen Thrasher, chair of social justice at Northwestern University, wrote that burning and occupying a police precinct is a proportionate response. This is academia. It says elsewhere, an archaeologist provided guidance and thematic sketches on how to topple obelisks in Washington, D.C., as they are symbols of systematic racism. So they're helping them. Actually, chains work better than ropes. Pull those things down. They're helping the thugs, the young people who've been indoctrinated, teaching them how to destroy. And then when they do it, saying, well, it's really just symbolic, it's proportionate. It says a PBS reporter couldn't find evidence of anarchists after week-long anarchy. Taxpayer-funded AP provided style guidance not to call looters looters, and on and on and on it goes. Just to finish with Carolyn Glick. She says, Democrats believe the riots will wreck President Trump's reelection hopes. Polls this week indicate that at least in the short term, the unrest is hurting Trump's chances of being reelected. This is from a couple weeks ago. This article, Glick says, then again, it's possible the chaos in the streets will strengthen public support for President Trump, who voters may view as the last bulwark separating them from national destruction. She says whether Trump wins or loses in November, the radicalization of white progressives at the heart of the mayhem represents the greatest short and long term threat to social cohesion in America. She's writing about a sickness from head to toe, sickness in the leadership. Going back to what Nigel Farage says, no one has the courage to stand up to it. There's a few lone voices, but it's rare in this world today. When we come back, we'll play some clips from the upcoming show, Celtic Throne, and also conclude with a short Bible study as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Sunday, July 5th. That's the promo, the trailer that we put out just the other day. 2 p.m. Oklahoma time. So wherever you happen to be in relation to this time zone, hopefully you'll join us for that live online event. I was telling the students just yesterday how that because we didn't have our ministerial conference, that would be going on right now, by the way, had we gone forward with that. But because of all of the COVID-19 lockdown and the social distancing, we pushed that back by 6 months. And as I was saying to the students yesterday, we've gone forward with these activities for the young people. And it's allowed us, some of us, to really put in some extra time and thought and energy into that performance there, Celtic Throne, and then, of course, the upcoming summer educational program. And I was telling the performers last night after their dress rehearsal that this comes at it comes at the perfect time because you sit through this show and you are uplifted. You are inspired. And we need that in a world that's going dark, in a world where there's so much negativity, where there's so much hatred. The world today is about to perish. And when you think about 2 Timothy 3 and other passages, the perilous times that are upon us, it can be easy to just get discouraged as well, even though we know the truth. You look around at what's happening with sickness and disease, with violence, with rioting. It's all prophesied. We know this. Perilous times, as Paul says in 2 Timothy 3:1, and then verses 2 through 4, this is from the Living Bible. It's a paraphrase, but it says here, people will love only themselves and their money. They will be proud and boastful, sneering at God, obedient, it says disobedient to their parents, ungrateful to them, and thoroughly bad. They will be hard-headed and never give in to others. They will be constant liars and troublemakers and will think nothing of immorality. They will be rough and cruel and sneer at those who try to be good. They will betray their friends. They will be hot-headed, puffed up with pride, and prefer good times to worshiping God. And further on in that same chapter, it talks about how that this evil, it just gets worse and worse and worse, leading up to the return of Jesus Christ. Now, you contrast that. You contrast, as I said yesterday on the show, you contrast that world, this world that we see today, with the new world that's about to be set up. A new world where our young people, our children, they are the leaders of tomorrow. And this is why God's giving them so many incredible opportunities. He's teaching them, as I said yesterday, he's educating them in his ways. He's educating them in his truth. He's educating them under his family government. That's what makes the SEP experience so rewarding and fruitful, inspiring, peaceful as well. I gave you that quote yesterday as to why there's so much peace and harmony at God's camps, God's youth camps, or even at God's college. You don't have violent protests at this college, on this campus. You have peace and harmony. You have love and outflowing concern. You have a lot of different races. We've got nations. This is a small college and a small campus. And we've got people from all over the world, from every nation. Certainly not every nation, but several nations from around the world, from several continents, Europe, Africa, North America, Australasia. Verse 6 of Isaiah 9, it says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David, like I touched on yesterday. You see, when you have God's government, you have peace. When you're upholding law and order, there will be peace. This is the message that the world desperately needs. This is why the summer educational program is so valuable. It says in this is the good news from 1972, the ultimate goal of SEP is to produce well-adjusted, balanced, resourceful young people. Its training is based on the precept that the Word of God is the foundation of knowledge, and that the full, abundant life is one of culture and balanced social activities. It says here, the summer educational program is a way of life. Students learn to live vibrant, happy, abundant, and satisfying lives at SEP. The program has been designed to give them a chance to experience wholesome, uplifting, and rewarding activities that have no kickbacks, that provide opportunity to develop perseverance, strength, courage, and confidence in them. What a contrast, comparing that to what you see on the streets of Seattle, on the streets of Portland. These sad and tragic scenes. This is our mission, to help everyone see this truth, to get this vision. Eventually they will. Ephesians 3:9, it says, and to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery, or to see or to understand how that this message needs to be distributed to the world. It says, which from the beginning of the world has been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ. We want to make all men see this. We want to give this message to the whole world. And eventually, of course, the multitudes will come around and see this truth. And the young people of today, they'll be educated properly. But for us, those of us in this church, my father goes into these verses, by the way, in Prophesy Again, the booklet. But it gives us quite the vision, quite the perspective. This is how we go forward with the message God's given us to proclaim. We do it even if there were only one or two people who responded. We know that the big response, it comes later. It comes during the tribulation. It comes just before the return of Christ. Right now, it's like a voice crying in the wilderness, and not that many people are listening or heeding this message. Not that many people are responding to the warning. And yet we go forward, and we go forward with the kind of energy and zeal described in Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7. God's government and the peace that it brings. What a world it will be when God's government is finally set up on this earth. Verse 10, here in Ephesians 3, it says, to the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church, the manifold wisdom of God. In other words, even the angelic realm, they are intently interested in this plan, this purpose that's unfolding before their eyes. They're excited. You can look at 1 Peter 1 and verse 12, a companion verse that brings out this same point. Those angels assisting God and Jesus Christ, those messengers, they're there. They are there excitedly anticipating God's family. In Prophesy Again, my father says, the angels are absolutely dazzled by what God is doing with man. Over in the epistles of Peter book, he says, God's people are in training to regenerate all of mankind. What a positive message. What a hopeful message. He says, our commission is not a negative commission. Yes, we warn, but if people heed the warning, what hope they have? We can give them solutions to the evils that they suffer. We can give them solutions if they come around to this work. And when they do, they're going to see, they're going to see and experience a lot of positive, hopeful, uplifting events. Just like with what we produce routinely from this campus. This is one of the most uplifting productions that this church has ever produced, certainly on the dancing end of things. And we've had a lot of performances and musicals over the years, and all of them, they all mutually excel one another. They're just spectacular. But I truly believe that the audience that goes away from Celtic Throne, they're going to be uplifted. Hopefully, many of them will want to look into the story, or perhaps look into the church that sponsors these wonderful shows, because this is the kind of entertainment that's about to spread over the earth. Wholesome, uplifting, inspiring, positive. There's not nearly enough of that in this dark and angry and negative world that we live in. We'll conclude today's program with some highlights from, this is from a dress rehearsal, so this is just last night, and they're still working to fine-tune this production. They've got another week of practicing left, but here are some highlights from last night's dress rehearsal from Celtic Throne. I'll just sign off with this montage.